Okay, everyone. So we will start with chapter 3 on IT compliance. And in this chapter, we will cover the laws, acts, and regulations. And following are the laws, acts, and regulations that we will cover in this chapter. The most important one is Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002, Graham-Leach Bilyeu Act of 1999, Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1996, also known as HIPAA, Data Protection Acts under EU Directive 95/46/EC, UK Act of 1998, Partial Information Technology Act India 2012, Federal Information Security Management Act of 2002, known as FISMA, and National Institutes of Standards and Technology, NIST Standards, Information Technology Act of 2000 and 2008 related to India. And obviously at the end we will have some self-assessment for yourself. So let's go to the first act, which is Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002. Now Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002 came in the background of lot of corporate failures and scandals in US in the year 2001. So because of the scandals, corporate scandals, the US capital market lost a lot of trust. Because it lost a lot of trust, the share prices went into tailspin and hit the rock bottom, and because of which the entire confidence in the market was lost. Now in this background, the following companies of course made a big part, played a big part of it, which is Enron, Tyco International, Adelphia and WorldCom. So there was total fraud, scandals, lying, and that led to the US regulator saying that we must have some act to protect the investors against such type of companies, as a result of which the Sarbanes-Oxley Act came into being. And this scandal led to bankruptcy of Enron and dissolution of Arthur Andersen, which was one of the big five audit and accountancy firm at that point of time, because they did not do the due diligence properly and misled the company and the regulators. Therefore, they were dissolved. And this act, this kind of fraud also led to imprisonment of corporate executives of these companies. But more importantly, it led to damage to investors, pensioners and communities, etc. Because the community and the pensioners and investors put on their hard-earned money into such corporates, and when all these scandals hit the headlines, the share prices of these companies went into a tailspin, resulting into huge loss, in some cases wiping off savings of these investors and pensioners. And that's something that we don't want to see very often. And as a result of which, this act came into being. So the important tenet under which this act was created was that this act and compliant of this act should lead to restoration of people's confidence in the reliability of financial reporting. All of us only see the financial reporting of the corporate, and basis that financial reporting, we decide to invest in this company or not invest or take out our money and see the growth prospects of the company and things like that. Now, what happens if this financial reporting itself was wrong, false and misleading? Obviously, you will be taking a non-reliable data for decision making, resulting into loss to yourself. Therefore, this act, and if companies follow this act, which in US is mandatory and India also, some portions of it is mandatory, some portions under SEBI Act is little different, but it has helped to restore the people's confidence in reliability of financial reporting. Why was it called Sarbanes-Oxley Act? Because it is named after the sponsor, which is Senator Paul Sarbanes, and Representative Michael Oxley, who together directed this piece of legislation to the US Senate, and therefore it's called Sarbanes-Oxley Act. It's also known in a lighter way in SABOX, SOX, Public Company Accounting Reform and Investor Protection Act, Corporate and Auditing Accountability and Responsibility Act, or PICABOO, as it is said in a lighter vein. The purpose of this act As I said, the crucial reason for this act was restorations of people's confidence in the reliability of the financial reporting. Therefore, this act would be much more around the financial reporting. Its purpose was to protect investors by improving the accuracy and reliability of corporate disclosures made pursuant to the security laws and for other purpose. So all corporate disclosures must have reliability and must be accurate, and this is very important. It set up a new and stricter standards for all US publicly traded companies. Please note that it does not apply to privately held companies in US. It is administered by Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC as it is popularly known in US. Again, little more detail on the objective. It has helped in restoring public trust and confidence. It improves the corporate governance, enhances transparency and completeness of financial statements and disclosure. It ensures that the company's executives are aware of material information emanating from a well-controlled environment, and it holds the company management accountable for material information that is filed with SEC and released to investors. So no longer could the management team get away by saying they were not aware of what is getting disclosed or only one member is aware of it. It ensured that the company's management is accountable. So the CEO, CFO is accountable for all the information that is getting filed with SEC and which is then released to the investor as well. So for complying with the SOX, companies must, one, identify their business process as they related to financial reporting at all levels. So they have to clearly identify which process leads to financial reporting and at all levels. Document the process flows and design of controls. It forces you to document the process controls that you have implemented, the flows and whichever controls you have put in place. It tells you you must check for the effectiveness of the design of controls. Is the design just for show or it is really helping controlling the process, and you must evaluate it, the effectiveness of this thing, by either an internal auditor or an external agency. Evaluate operating effectiveness of internal controls. So whatever controls you put internally, are they operationally effective? Identify and remediate internal control weakness over financial reporting. So once you are able to identify, the process itself should be able to identify any process weakness, control weakness, and then remedial measures must be taken to ensure that this is not reported and not repeated, and in the next reporting cycle, correct information is coming out of it. You must obtain attestation from an independent auditor. That is one of the most important thing that is required under the SOX. And you must establish procedures for ongoing monitoring to enable certification. So procedures for ongoing monitoring and then get it certified. This act actually contains 11 titles, and we'll go through it one by one. It is required to understand. First title is from Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, or PCAOB. This title consists of 9 sections and establishes PCAOB to provide independent oversight of public accounting firms providing audit services. That means all the auditors. It also provides details about who has to be registered with it to become auditors, a central board around it, and things like that. Auditor independence. One of the main reasons why Arthur Andersen got dissolved is conflict of interest. The act ensures that the auditor is independent. This title has 9 sections, and it establishes standards for external auditor independence to limit conflict of interest. So if you are registered as an external auditor, you cannot provide any other services to the organization. So no consulting thing one has to do, one can do with the same company if you are designated as the external auditor. The third title is corporate responsibility. It consists of 8 sections and mandates that senior executives take individual reporting
responsibility for the accuracy and completeness of corporate financial report. It lists down what are those responsibilities, what is the interaction with external audit agency and things like that. Enhanced financial disclosure is the next title. It consists of 9 sections and describes enhanced reporting for financial transaction, how all material information has to be reported to the management and how they will be reported back into the SEC and stuff like that. Analyst conflict of interest is the 5th title. It says it consists of 1 section which includes measures designed to help restore investor confidence in the reporting of securities analyst. Here the analyst has to tell what is his interest in particular report, if any, and how much does he hold and other such things, so that when analyst gives out a report, there is an element of confidence in the report that he's giving. Commission resource and authorities. It consists of 4 sections and defines practices to restore investor confidence in security analyst. Studies and reports. This is a title which consists of 5 sections and requires that the Comptroller General and SEC to perform various studies and report their findings. So they'll do studies of how inter-exchange of the various elements in the reporting thing is done and what are their roles, responsibility, are they doing it well, not doing it well, and they publicly publish these findings so that the investor gets the confidence on what is happening in the ecosystem, financial ecosystem. Corporate and criminal fraud accountability. It consists of 7 sections and describes specific criminal penalties for manipulation, alteration of financial records, etc. So it clearly defines that you should not be altering any financial records and data, and no manipulation is allowed, and there is a strict penalty and responsibility fixed under this. White collar crime penalty enhancement. It consists of 6 sections and increases the criminal penalties associated with white collar crimes and conspiracies. Corporate tax returns. It consists of 1 section that states that the chief executive officer, the CEO, should sign the company's tax returns. That means the entire onus of reporting of financial data lies with the CEO, and this is very important because CEO would not sign anything or cannot absolve himself of the responsibility by saying he was giving wrong data. He has to find if the data given is accurate, and then that has to be filed with SEC for public consumption. Corporate fraud accountability heading. It consists of 7 sections and identifies corporate fraud and records tampering as criminal offense and joins these offense to specific penalties. This is the important thing. There are 2 sections in the act which is very important from an IT compliance point of view. The corporate responsibility for financial report, which is section 302, says the CEO and CFO must personally certify that the financial reports are accurate and complete. They must also assess and report on the effectiveness of internal controls around financial reporting. This is the most important section. Therefore, all CEOs and CFOs of public listed companies in US have to ensure that the internal controls are working, they are effective, and the data given is accurate and complete, and the financial reports are also accurate and complete. Another section, 404, is titled Management Assessment of Internal Controls. So internal control reporting and impacts corporate governance and financial disclosure reporting. So who's managing it, how are they assessing it, is one of the key responsibilities of the board of the public listed companies. The impact Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002 has on India is that Indian companies listed on US stock exchange are required to comply with the act. In India, SEBI also has listing agreements under clause 49 about the CEO signing the financial report. Perceived benefits and cost of SOX is there. And wording, the only challenge in SOX as the opponents of this act says that the section wording of some section are broad based and does not give specific guidelines as to which control needs to be assessed. Information security, for example, is not explicitly mentioned in section 404, But dependence is prevalent in all organizations. So unless there is information security, if information flows out very easily, then there is no control. So it is not very clearly mentioned, but it is assumed to be there. That's what the opposition to SOX is able to say against the SOX compliance. But overall, it has lot of benefit. There has been public trust has been regained with this act. Financial reporting has become more stringent. The data that get published is much more clearer, and the room of ambiguity has been reduced much further. Now we'll go to topic 2, which is the Graham Leach Billy Lee Act of 1999. The GLB Act, or the Graham Leach Billy Lee Act, is also known as Financial Service Modernization Act of 1999. It came into law on signing of it by President Bill Clinton. It removed the barriers in market among banking companies, security companies, and insurance companies. Previous to this act, like 1 year before it in 1998, Citicorp, which was a financial banking institution, commercial banking company, got merged with Travelers Group, which was in insurance, and created a Citigroup corporate, which was against the prevalent act. The SEC gave its permission waiver for its compliance by 1 year till this act came, and under this act then it got formed. It basically believed that during good time investment companies did well, and during tough times people would put their money into saving account. So any financial institution which had both investment and saving would be able to help the customer both in good and bad times, and therefore this act, which repealed the Glass-Steagall Act, which did not allow the merger of insurance and commercial banking companies, was repealed, and this act came into being. So commercial bank, investment bank, securities firm and insurance companies were allowed to consolidate under one umbrella through this act. The purpose, as explained, was to ensure that the financial institution respect the privacy of the customer and protect the security and confidentiality of non-public personal information. So privacy of their customers and protect the security and the confidentiality of non-public personal information. The objective of this act was to ensure, as we said, customer information, protect against anticipated threat or hazards to the security or integrity of such information, and protect against unauthorized access to or use for customer information that could result in substantial harm or inconvenience to any customer. Customers expect that the financial institution they transact with are sensitive about the security of their personal information, and poorly managed customer data can lead to identity theft. Identity theft, there's a explanation of what does identity theft includes. It includes gathering information about name, address and phone numbers of the customer, the date of birth, social security number, credit card numbers, financial account numbers, and details of any financial transactions. This act contains 7 titles. The first one is facilitating affiliations among banks, security firms and insurance company, so they can all come together and register themselves. Functional regulations, where they can regulate themselves. If a bank is advising a mutual fund company, they can register themselves also as an investment advisor to that mutual fund company. Insurance, they can get insurance under it. Unitary theft holding company provisions. Privacy, so they have to ensure that they do not disclose non-public personal information and ensure there is no fraudulent access to financial information. Federal Home Loan Bank System Modernization. Some elements of home loan bank system modernization was incorporated in this, and some other provisions were added to the title. Major components in place to protect consumers' non-public personal information include financial privacy rule, which provides for privacy policy agreement between the company and the consumer related to the protection of customers' personal non-public information. Safeguard rule, which requires financial institution to develop an written information security plan that describes how the company is prepared for and plans to continue to protect clients' non-personal public information. So any company formed under this act has to have a written information security plan that explains on what is the data, customer data security which the company has, and how it will continue to protect the customer's non-public personal information. Pretexting protection occurs when someone tries to gain access to personal non-public information without proper authority to do so. So this act ensures that there is a pretexting protection to that information, and as the information security plan has to have, which has to be written, has to have clauses on saying how that has been protected. Data breaches generally occur due to inadequate training on GLBA, lack of awareness, potential risk of the action, lack of management commitment, and poor oversight. Commitment from top is essential to ensure a sound CLBA compliance program. That goes for any program. That commitment from management, the CEO, is must to ensure that it is implemented the way it has been planned to be. So how do you implement it? One, well-written, clear and sound policies and procedures should be in place. Management must check whether all those policies are being checked, reviewed and improved upon. The top-down communication has to come in place where it is clearly identified the downside of such a data going out and what actions will be taken against an employee who are doing it. Risk analysis and periodic review of risk factors has to be done. You must have effective control monitoring and testing system. Incident reporting, issues tracking and corrective and preventing measures based on incidents. It is not that once you set up a system that nothing will happen. As over a period of time, there will be many incidents that will happen, some very minor in nature. Hopefully, if you're lucky, no major incident. But all incidents, if you put it in an incident tracker, you get to the root cause why that incident happened and change your policies to reflect how you're going to take care of it in future, helps to keep the policy current and helps you to have a better management control. Track new regulatory and industry requirement standards. Do an independent audit. Don't say just because we are following it. Get an independent audit done and you'll find out whether your policies are effective or not. Effective ethics and anti-fraud programs has to be there. There's various companies now go into code of conduct training, which ensures that the employees are aware of the risk they get into by sharing customers' non-public personal information with any other party. Adequate resource and effective employee training is the cornerstone for ensuring that all employees are aware. The third one, in Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1996, also known as HIPAA. The health insurance, HIPAA, also known as Kennedy-Kassenbaum or Kassenbaum-Kennedy Act, after two of its leading sponsors. It's created to provide better access to health insurance, limit fraud and abuse, and reduce administrative cost in the healthcare industry. And it consists of only two titles. Title 1, it protects the health insurance coverage for workers and their families when they change or lose their job. And Title 2, known as Administrative Simplification, it's a provision requires that the establishment of national standards for electronic health care transactions and national identifiers of providers, health insurance plans and employers. It addresses the security and privacy of health data and sets a civil and criminal penalties for violation. HIPAA Act gives right to privacy to individuals from age 12 through 18. So no information can be shared. HIPAA covers all protected healthcare information and not very specific records. Organizations complying with HIPAA need to protect electronic, paper, as well as oral discussion pertaining to information. Now this is very critical. It is not only electronic, it is even paper as well as oral discussions has to be protected. HIPAA mandates use of computers and patient privacy while dealing with patient data and information. HIPAA compliance applies to healthcare providers, people who provide any provider of medical or other health services that bills or is paid for healthcare in the normal course of business. Healthcare clearinghouse businesses that process or facilitate processing of health information received from other business, which is in India third party administrators, subcontractors, firms, individuals who have been outsourced from business associates. So they are also covered in HIPAA. Title 2 of HIPAA has 5 rules regarding administrative simplification. And why Title II is important? Because it details out what information can be given, shared, and how it has to be controlled. It's the privacy rule first. It regulates the use of disclosure of protected health insurance or PHI held by covered entities. Covered entities must disclose PHI to an individual on request or to the law authorities only. An individual who believes that their privacy rule is not being upheld can file a complaint with the Department of Health and Human Service Office for civil rights. Transaction and court set rule. It is aimed to simplify the healthcare transactions by requiring all health plans to engage in healthcare transactions in a standardized way. Several ED electronic data interchange or EDI standards and defined to store and transfer medical information. Briefly, these are healthcare claim transaction, retail pharmacy claim transaction, and healthcare claim payment and advice TR set. EDI benefit enrollment, EDI payroll deduction, eligibility benefit inquiry, benefit response, claim status report, claim status notification, review information, and acknowledgement transaction set. Third rule, which is the security rule, it deals specifically with the electronic protected health information and lays out three security safeguards, which is administrative, physical, and technical. So administratively, how you will ensure that all the securities are in place, how will you test and things like that. Physical, who has access to the electronic data, how can they access, where it will be stored and how it will be stored, and technical, the storage, the access control and things like that. Unique identifiers rule, HIPAA covered entities must use only the national provider's identifier to identify covered healthcare providers. Enforcement rules sets penalties for violating HIPAA rules and establishes procedure for investigation and hearing for HIPAA violation. Enhancements, Hi-Tech Act came into force in 2009, where business associates need to be compliant with the HIPAA security rule. Frequent issues in HIPAA complaints is that misuse and disclosure of PHI and no protection in place of health information. Patients are unable to access their health information. Using or disclosing more than the minimum necessary protected health information. No safeguards of electronic protected health information. HIPAA compliance is critical and complicated because it has triggered a lot of outsourcing initiatives to India. Classify as business associate or subcontractor. Concerns of data security and adhering to standard quality norms. We move into topic 4, which is Data Protection Acts, and we'll cover European Union, UK and Indian Technology Act, which is relevant for data protection. So the European Union Directives 95/46/EC, UK Act of 1998 and Information Technology Act of India in 2012.